We're going to take a look today at a passage which began the Bible of Mark and which culminates the Bible of John, so that we see one being descriptive of the faith of man at the beginning of starting on the path, and the other being descriptive of the faith of man after he has awakened to the inner light. Now, the first passage is in Mark. In the first chapter, the 10th to the 16th verse, "Now as he walked by the sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishers. And Jesus said unto them, Come ye after me, I will make you to become fishers of men." At the first awareness of something higher than your own human selfhood, Christ says to you, "Come ye after me, and I will make you to become fishers of men." You may not be conscious of Christ saying this within yourself, but there is some subtle inner guidance, and now you find yourself on a path in which you are leaving your old nets behind you. You are grafted away from your old ways, your old beliefs, finally to a higher level where you're even grafted away from the very mind itself upon which you depended. And you are made into a fisher of men. Now, that was a prophecy. And as that prophecy was made to the disciples, it was also made to each of us. The Christ has spoken this to mankind: follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. Now we look at it in Luke, because in Luke we have it a little more detailed. And then we can have a good comparison to the way it comes in the last chapter of John. In the fifth chapter of Luke, it begins as follows. "It came to pass that as the people passed upon him to hear the word of God, he stood by the lake of Gennesaret, and saw two ships standing by the lake, but the fishermen were gone out of them. They were washing their nets. He entered into one of the ships, which was Simon's, and prayed him that he would thrust out a little from the land. And he sat down and taught the people out of the ship. Now when he had left speaking, he said unto Simon, Launch out into the deep, and let down your nets for a draught. And Simon answering said unto him, Master, we have toiled all the night, and have taken nothing. Nevertheless, at thy word I will let down the net. And when they had this done, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and their net brake." Launching out into the deep, we have learned through our progress in the scripture, was departing beyond the five senses. The normal sense mind was the shallows. And there they caught no fish. We, in the shallows of the sense mind, catch no fish. And at this point, fish is a symbol of divine truth. Through the sense mind, we are not receptive to divine truth. And now we go out beyond the sense mind, into the deep. But being novices, even though our catch is great, our net breaks. We find that the mind of man is unable to receive spiritual truth. And this is our introduction to the transformation that must take place in a man. And as this procedure continues, we find that when they had this done, they enclosed a great multitude of fishes, and the net brake, and they beckoned unto their partners, which were in the other ship, that they should come and help them. And they came and filled both the ships, so that they began to sink. And when Simon saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord." For he was astonished, and all that were with him, at the draught of the fishes with which they had taken. And so was also James and John, the sons of Zebedee, which were partners with Simon. And Jesus said unto Simon, "Fear not, from henceforth thou shalt catch men." And when they had brought their ships to land, they forsook all and followed him. Now these men then were motivated by some inner impulse now to follow Christ, although to their minds they were following a man named Jesus. And this is our faith at the beginning of the path. If you just cast your mind back a little, you find that there was a time when suddenly you knew there was another way. And then you went out, and for some reason or other, even though the quick results of the new way were magnificent, somehow you couldn't hold all that you received. Your net broke. You needed help. You had to call another ship to help you. And even then, the great weight of the new truth coming upon you was so heavy, it seemed that the mind was sinking like a ship. At the beginning of the path, we have what is called the faith that is not anchored in that which it needs. We have a new kind of faith, a faith in a God, a faith in a way, a faith in something, but we don't know how to define it. And we don't have the net to catch the fullness of the truth. But now, after 3 years with Jesus Christ, something has happened. They have learned much truth. They seemingly have caught much fish, even to the point that twice after the crucifixion, they have been visited by the Master. Once the Master has appeared to them in the closed room, and again later when Thomas was present, the Master appeared. You would think now their nets would hold. And yet a funny thing happens, and only John puts it here, of all the Gospels. And so he begins his 21st verse with what appears to be a repetition of these incidents that began in the beginning of his ministry with the disciples, so that you might say they have fallen back. And you might compare this to your own experience as you go forward, as you're lifted, sometimes even into spiritual ecstasy. And then there are moments of shattered faith. There are the ups and downs, the upheavals and the uplifting. The earthquakes within, the volcanoes, and then the great doubts. And here is a very strange thing, full of surprises. Twice visited by the Master, the disciples who had left their nets, who no longer relied on even a profession for their livelihood, were going back to fishing. They had returned to their old consciousness. They had gone home, as you remember. The old consciousness, they were starting again. And the strange thing is, they had already twice seen the Master. And so Peter says, "I go a-fishing." So with us you can see that we may rise to sublime heights, but somewhere, somehow, that faith with which we start is insufficient. Peter had it, if you remember, when he tried to walk upon the water. And he fell through. And the teaching there was, as the Master said, "O ye of little faith," that Peter had little faith. And yet the heart was willing and eager. There was zeal, there was desire to follow, but the faith could not support him. So with us, we may have a great human faith, but it cannot support us, and we fall through, and we wonder, "Why is my faith insufficient?" And this 21st chapter is going to tell us why. And so it is that, now for the third time, the Master comes upon the disciples. After these things, Jesus showed himself again to the disciples at the Sea of Tiberias. and on this wise showed he himself. There were together Simon Peter and Thomas called Didymus, and Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and two other disciples. In other words, seven disciples were present. These seven were the advanced disciples. They were ready for this third visit. They were ready now to become fishers of men. And they were together, it says. They were joined in one purpose. And now the symbolism begins. It's not just an ordinary fishing trip. "I go a-fishing," said Peter. Let us remember that even though it would appear on the outer that they're simply going fishing as they did when they were fishermen, there have been two appearances of the Christ after crucifixion. And now you may know that this fishing trip is on the inner plain. A new kind of faith has come upon them. And to teach us about it, we have to see it on the outer and the inner. We'll see it on the outer as a fishing trip. We'll see it on the inner as a spiritual experience in which the disciples have come aware of the invisible. Their new senses have developed. They can now see the invisible Christ and even make out invisible objects. And they themselves may not even be aware that they are doing this. As you pass from sense vision to soul vision, you are not always aware that you have stepped over the veil. It all looks the same to you, except a little brighter, a little clearer, a little more beautiful, maybe a little breathtakingly beautiful at times. But you can't be sure what you're seeing. Is it with your inner senses or your outer? And that is a state of awe which is described in here. "I go a-fishing," said Peter. And that Peter says, "I go a-fishing," is a very important phrase. Now, when the seven are listed, Peter and Thomas are listed first. Peter, the will, the human sense will. Thomas, the understanding. And when Peter says, "I go a-fishing," that means the will of you is going fishing. Now, everything of you then must follow that will. When that will of Peter says, "I go a-fishing," the other six must go along. And if you see that they do, they say, "We'll go with you." Everything follows the will of yourself. And if your will is human, then everything follows your human will. If your will is divine, everything follows divine will. And the distinction is now being brought here that Peter is the spokesman of yourself. The will of you is the spokesman of the rest of you. Peter says, "I go a-fishing." You say, "I take a drive." You say, "I go to the mountains." The rest of you must follow. The will of you is decided. And let's see what happens to this will of Peter. And they say unto him, "We also go with you." And so they went forth. They entered the ship immediately. And that night they caught nothing. Wherever your will goes, the rest of you immediately goes. And in this case, they catch nothing. They're right back to the first chapter of Mark, the fifth chapter of Luke. What have they learned? It would seem they've learned nothing. And there will be times like that in your life, and have been, when you think, "Oh my gosh, I've studied this for so many years, and right now, I feel bankrupt. It's as if I never studied a word, or never had an experience, or never knew a truth. I just feel barren." So it was with them. They caught nothing. But when the morning was now come, Jesus stood on the shore. But the disciples knew not that it was Jesus. Now the symbolism begins in earnest. This morning that was come could not have come without those 3 years. Even though at the moment they had caught nothing and seemed barren, that was only the outer picture. That may be your outer picture. But there will come a morning, and this is a strange and beautiful morning because it is really a mystic dawn, a mystic sunrise. This is the morning within. The morning when, without their being aware of what is moving them, they are in some way conscious of the radiance of Christ. They don't recognize Jesus, you see. He's standing on the shore. And that shore, if you can draw back and see this vastness of the shore and the sea and the land, you see the symbolism then, that they are on the sea, the sea of world thought. But out here, where the sea meets the land, which is the shore, on the brink of their consciousness, rising, just like the early sun may just hit the mountaintops, and yet itself may not be visible, so rising within them was an awareness of an impulse. Very outskirts of their consciousness, on the shore, was this impulse called Jesus or the invisible Christ. They could see maybe a form but not recognize the essence at the moment. And so we are moved by this invisible power. All our years are coming into fruition in the mystic dawn within ourselves. The beginning of a real golden harvest. When, without being able to define that which is happening, we know it is happening. We can feel the rising Christ. And it matters not what we have caught, what we have understood, what we have comprehended, what we have been able to grasp. We are now being lifted in a strange way. We are the fish. And the fish must be caught in the ocean and lifted out of the ocean. And just as the fish are caught and lifted out of the ocean by the fishermen, we are caught by the Christ and lifted out of the sea of world thought. To be caught up by the Christ is to be saved from mortality. And this is the experience now which the disciples are going through. They are the fish. They were the fishermen. But now they are the fish, and they are being raised up by the Christ. They are being caught. They are being saved. They are being redeemed. Each is becoming aware of the inner light. And though they're still in the sea, that light which is within them is seen to them to be on the shore, and they are approaching it. So it may seem to you that the goodness that you have been seeking is out there to be touched and felt. But if it is a spiritual experience, it is happening within you and projecting what you call goodness into the external, but it's really an inner event made visible. We are approaching the shore, but we still cannot discern the nature of the Christ. Then Jesus saith unto them, Children, have ye any meat? And they answered him, No. That which is on the shore, which is deep within their consciousness, not quite clearly defined yet, is saying within, Have you any meat? And first addressing them as children, meaning spiritually immature. Meat meaning substance. And of course the substance is spirit. The question then comes to you, have you accepted spiritual identity? Have you any meat? Or are you still a child? And it's a great moment when you can say, No, I have no meat. When you can confess that you have been spiritually poor, you open the gateway to the Christ. Only when we are aware of our spiritual poverty are we replenished. If we think we are rich, if we think we are worldly wealthy, if we are not aware that without spirit we are nothing, then we are that which the Old Testament calls vanity. All is vanity. We are intellectually alive and yet dead. The disciples know, and that's a great stride, that they are spiritually barren. No, we have no meat. We have no food of the soul. We have no divine substance. That's why we're out here with no catch. That's why our lives have been fruitless. That's why there have been discords and upheavals. That's why we lack. That's why we're limited. We have no spiritual substance. No spiritual vision. No spiritual awareness. They were men in physical bodies of flesh. They were living in this world, on the sea of human thought. But they were headed to the land. We are headed to a land, another realm, which coexists right where the sea is, adjacent to it. We have to cross out of the sea into the land. Out of world thought, out of the sense mind, which says you caught nothing. Your life has been meaningless, or your life has been a fragment, or your life has not been fulfilled. You have not fulfilled your purpose on this earth. This is the sense mind talking. And the answer comes, because I have no meat, because I am spiritually barren, because I am poor in spirit. And always the Christ within is forcing you to reach these inner conclusions. If you are being moved by the Christ. Now this should be the path then, the confession of duality. Oh yes, I've had some spiritual moments, but I've also been of this world. I've also been motivated by improving my human welfare. I've thought about how I could get along better as a human being. That's not the meat. That's the division. That's why the disciples were out there with no fish. They had not gone all the way. He said unto them, cast the net on the right side of the ship, and ye shall find. In the original, at the beginning of their journey into spirit, he had told them to launch out into the deep. Now he tells them to cast the net at the right side of the ship. Now the ship is the mind. We sail along in our mind. And we sail in the sea of this world. There's another sea there that we don't see. There are two seas, the sea of the world and the sea of spirit. And in our mind, we travel in the sea of the world. When he's told to cast his net on the right side of the ship, Peter is being told that the right side of the ship is not his mind, but his soul. When you dwell in your soul instead of your mind, you are casting your net on the right side. And that right side enables you to move in the sea of spirit instead of the sea of world mind. That's the only way you make it to the shore. In other words, unless we step out of the five-sense mind consciously, transcending it, disbelieving all evidence of the senses. You're not going to take a pair of scissors and cut off your sense of touch or put something over your eyes so that you don't see. You're going to look through those eyes and look through and hear through those ears, but you're not going to accept what those senses bring to you for one good reason. God is all, and the senses have no capacity to see God. The senses have never heard God or seen God or touched God. And if the senses cannot find God for us, what do they find but the lie? To find God, then, we cannot rely on senses. We must step out and above the senses. And that means we stand in the senses, rejecting the evidence of the senses, until that inner stirring opens us to the Christ radiance, which leads us to the shore of the new senses. The senses that can not only see the form, but see the essence. The senses that begin to look and find objects that exist. Now, when those senses take over, two things will happen. Mostly, they will replace the senses of the mind, so that you'll be seeing what eyes do not see. There is also a time, and only for instruction, when you have what is called double vision. You can see both the one that appears to the naked human eye, and you can see the inner that appears only to the soul eye. It doesn't happen very often. Now, when it happens, having heard about it, or having had this double vision, perhaps, you may find that you now understand it. And I'd like to explain to you what it means. To a geologist, we're in a world now where the rocks have formed through the ages. If you've gone into the caves, some places out in the west here where you can see various strata of rock that have, over the years, become hardened and atrophied, you would agree with the geologist that this has taken place over thousands and thousands of years. That's untrue. That's true only to the human sense mind. Actually, this instant, everything that is in this world is being manufactured. Every rock that allegedly was there even millions of years ago is being manufactured this instant by the world mind. And if you ever have a glimpse of that, you will understand that this is a now world in a counterfeit sense. There isn't a single thing in it that happened yesterday. The complete counterfeit is happening at this present moment. And also at this present moment, that which it is counterfeiting is present. Both the original genuine in spirit and the counterfeit of the world mind are both this instant. And you live in one or the other. And there is a moment in your double vision when you see both. And you can see how it's possible to stand in the midst of all of the ravages of the world untouched. Because they're only happening in the one sense mind, and they're not happening in the soul sense. Whatever you happen to be experiencing is the one you're in. And for you, the highest is the majority with God. Now, I'd like to explain that more fully, but the best thing for it is to wait until the experience touches you. And you see that there are times when you're actually looking out through a soul sense and don't know you are. That's how subtly and effortlessly you move from one to the other, even though you may not be aware of it. And then ultimately, of course, you become more aware of it. Now the disciples are not aware of it. They are looking out through soul senses. That's why they're beginning to discern the presence of a man called Jesus. He's not in a physical body, you know. He's already demonstrated there is no physical body. And yet they're seeing him for the third time. They're looking through their soul senses. And now they're seeing things they never saw before. In one moment, no fish. Why do fish suddenly appear? Because they're stepping out of the physical universe into the spiritual universe, through their soul senses. They're being lifted by the inner Christ. It's like the loaves and fishes for the multitude. One moment, just a few fish, a few loaves. In another moment, 5,000 people are lifted into a vision of something they couldn't see a moment ago, which was always there, even though they couldn't see it. In a moment, they all were in their soul senses, but didn't have the vaguest idea that they were. And they saw a supply interpreted to them as loaves and fishes. So it is, you will find the miracles that occur in your life are not because God suddenly decided you were a good person, but because through some instinctive awareness of the inner Christ, you were open to your soul senses, and that which was ever present is now presented to you through your soul senses in a way that you can comprehend and utilize. Now, there is a transition or a transformation in the nature of faith that is taking place in Peter and the disciples. Your repeated experiences change the nature of your faith. At the beginning, it was blind faith. That's why the net broke. It was faith that could only see and be amazed and say, "Isn't that marvelous?" And yet, go out and do likewise? No, couldn't do that, because the mind couldn't hold the meaning behind what had happened. Now they're going to learn how to hold the meaning of what is happening. Their faith is going to be joined together with some other quality to make it a faith that will no longer be called by the Master a little faith. And this faith will be such that the nets will not break regardless of the load. This is the faith that is being built in us now. Cast the net on the right side of the ship and ye shall find. And they cast therefore, and now they were not able to draw it for the multitude of fishes. They were not looking through the mind anymore. They were looking through the soul. And the soul experiences that which is necessary at every moment. The soul is ever in complete rapport with the infinite spiritual universe. If you need fish, there are fish. If you need clothing, there is clothing. Grace flows through the soul. Suddenly there are fish. Now these fish are not to be interpreted only as physical, tangible fish. Fish also means new truth. The inner truth, the fish, represent the new levels of wisdom that are welling up within. Great fish, great truth. Truths that the human mind would never even know about. You know how people ask questions in this work, question after question, and yet not one of the questions of the human mind even begins to anticipate the new truths that come up when the soul is open. There are no questions from the human mind about these truths because the human mind knows nothing about them. Now, the truth that passes all mental understanding is brought into play. But what's happening here? There's more than just Peter there. There's more than disciples there. There is Christ. Christ on the shore is the invisible activity in the consciousness of the disciples. Christ on the shore of your consciousness changes you. Your vision changes. Your hearing changes. Your understanding changes. You are lifted into the awareness of a realm not known to mankind. You are lifted behind the veil of all religions on the earth, behind the veil of science, behind the veil of the human mind, behind the veil of the atom, behind the veil of Darwin's theory. behind the veil of human evolution, behind the veil of human death, behind the veil of everything that the human mind knows, as Christ rising in you awakens you to a new self of your own being. We begin to vaguely know that we are finding another level of ourself, a higher level, that heaven is a realm within our own consciousness, and that transformation from the self who lives in the human senses and in the human body is taking place. Even though in a small measure sometimes, this awareness is destined to grow. It depends on your capacity to listen to the inner Christ and then to obey the divine impulse that comes to you. I'd like to underline two words: divine impulse. Sometimes you find it difficult to realize that God is everywhere, or that the allness of God is everywhere. Perhaps it's too big, too much of a project to know that I here am the Spirit of God and my Spirit is everywhere and nothing else is there. This should become normal consciousness. But you certainly can remember and even test out that the divine impulse is everywhere. So that if you are confronted with a situation that would seem to be frightening or despairing or in some way causing you grave concern, this would call for an immediate readjustment to the fact that wherever this situation is emanating from, there is the divine impulse invisible. Right there, my net is catching no fish. I'm just catching world mind as a problem. And yet right there is the divine impulse. And if I can rest in the conscious awareness that the divine impulse is there, and accept that it is there, without any great affirmations about God is everywhere, and God is wonderful, and God is perfect, and God is all power, without any words, in me, the acceptance that the divine impulse is there lights the spark of that divine impulse in me here. And there's an inner radiance begins. You can almost feel the beginning of the rainbow. The omnipresent divine impulse never fails. You're casting your net on the right side of the ship. That's how you begin to enter the soul realm, to accept the omnipresent divine impulse, knowing it's invisible to human senses, but it is present, awaiting acceptance, recognition. And the recognition cannot be with your eyes or your ears. It must be with a quality in you. And you'll find that quality in you which recognizes the divine impulse becomes your soul. As you accept it, this is your recognition. And then your soul is kindled. Christ rises. And sometimes, quickly, startlingly quick, you find a healing takes place because the divine impulse you have accepted was right where someone else was accepting a problem. That divine impulse out there is really a divine impulse within you. It's always present. You simply do not see it or notice it or acknowledge it, and so you cast your net, your mind, on the wrong side of the ship. But the moment you are aware that even though you're not in conjunction with the divine impulse, it is there. Then you readjust and you accept that which you cannot see. The fish you cannot see, you accept. and you cast your mind into the acknowledgement that the divine impulse must be here because God is. Everywhere is God, everywhere is the divine impulse, and that impulse, listened to, accepted, acknowledged, begins to beat its own drum. And you are listening to the unlistenable. And you find that it's there all the time. You have now another level of faith. Faith in the unseen. Not just faith in what you could see with your eyes, like Peter, but faith in what you cannot see with your eyes. Everywhere, the divine impulse. You're walking through it. And then as you listen, which means you step out of the mind that does not see the divine impulse, you give your being over to this divine impulse you cannot see. You're coming into the early dawn of love. Love is when you give your being to God, sight unseen. And this love united with faith becomes the new dispensation. This is the missing ingredient. Faith without love is empty. Faith with love walks on the water. When faith and love are united in you, you have the key to all scripture, the key to the meaning of Christ. When we love God enough to accept God's presence where our senses do not know God's presence, we are going beyond human faith. We are opening love. The disciples are learning that now. Their human senses tell them that they have caught no fish. The inner Christ is saying, get out of that mind. Cast your net on the right side of the ship. Don't believe what your sense mind is reporting, ever. No matter what your sense mind says, it's the wrong side of the ship. You must go beyond it. To the right side, you must launch into the deep, beyond sense mind. You do this on the knowledge that God is present as the living divine impulse. And the moment that impulse touches you and you touch it, it fans out and becomes the complete spectrum of everything God is. The power, the presence, the love, the truth, the beauty. That impulse is an infinite one. And all you do is rest in it. You don't have to catch the fish. It catches all the fish for you. Because the fish were already there and caught. The fullness of your being is already present. But you must get beyond the sense mind. Then your net is filled with all that God is. Something in you tells you when it's time to go beyond the senses. And that something is now happening in Peter. Therefore, that disciple whom Jesus loved saith unto Peter, it is the Lord. The human understanding didn't know this was the Christ telling them to cast the net on the right side. Peter didn't know this was the Christ. John did. The awareness of the Christ comes not from the human mind. It comes from love. Love spontaneously responds to the Christ and alerts the human mind. And if you try to skip that step and try with the human mind to climb the gates of heaven, it doesn't work. Peter knows nothing about what is happening, but John does. In other words, love in you is aware of the Christ. And your mind must be aware of this love. That's the connecting link, the bridge between the understanding, the human will, and the Christ. If you've got a love center that is low, then the mind continues in its material intellectual way. But you cannot manufacture this love. You find then that the reason love is mentioned here, as John alerting Peter, is that when you find that the love is in you, this is a sign that you are in that progression of consciousness which is illumination. When the love in you awakens the mind, you are in the illuminated state. Illumination and love are one and the same. You will recognize that state then of illumination by the love you feel. The love not only of yourself, but of all that exists throughout the universe. You will look at all created things and say, well, this is much different than it appears to be. It would appear to be that there are no fish here, no fish there, but just as there are fish everywhere, so there is perfect essence everywhere. And when this overwhelming awareness of the invisible essence everywhere is yours, then the human understanding, which was faith without knowledge, is now reinforced by faith confirmed by love. This is the faith that never wavers. This is the faith that takes you into heaven on earth. This love now alerts Peter. This is the Lord. Up to this point, Peter could only believe what he saw with his own senses. He saw more fish. He was excited. Now he sees Jesus. He sees Jesus because something in him has awakened him to the fact that there is someone there called Christ. Very excited. It is said, though, that he was naked. And now he girds himself with the garment he had discarded. We have to see that very carefully. When Simon Peter heard it was the Lord, he girt his fish's coat unto him, for he was naked, and did cast himself into the sea. Now we are naked, just as Peter was. And that nakedness is human faith. When you're naked, you're without spiritual faith. You have all the human faith, and then the water does not support you. Now Peter is adding love to the faith that couldn't support him, and something beautiful happens. And that love means that Peter is getting out of Peter. You see, he's not loving Peter anymore. The arrogant, overzealous, overbearing qualities within him have been refined. John is alerting us to the fact that Peter, becoming aware of his Christ self, is now able to generate that faith which he didn't have at the early part of his ministry. There's a deeper meaning, though. Simon Peter was naked, and now he girt his fish's coat unto him. The true meaning of naked is more than just lacking in faith. It's part of the meaning, but when you're in a mortal body, you are naked. All who walk in material bodies are naked biblically. His fish's coat means that he suddenly became aware through Christ of his other body, his soul body. And you see, now he can cast himself into the sea. You remember last week that Mary Magdalene paused before she entered the tomb. And that pause was to teach us, this great pause, never to enter a room until we are consciously aware that not a physical body is going to enter. We're not in such a physical body. And here it comes in another way. Peter, girding himself with his fisher's coat. Your fisher's coat is your body of the soul. Now, if you're conscious of yourself as a physical body, you're in the state called naked. If you're conscious of yourself in a spiritual body, you are wearing your fisher's coat. One drowns in the sea, one can walk in the sea. Now, this has to be a conscious activity. You cannot decide that it will take care of itself, because it doesn't. Through love, your faith must rise beyond what your senses know to the acceptance consciously that you are in a soul body that is invisible and can never be destroyed. And you must consciously live in the awareness of it, so that you're never caught in the belief that you inhabit a physical form. Now, that can only be taken on a different level of faith than the blind faith of a human mind. It must be taken through the experience which confirms that faith. You can't have the experience unless you are making the effort to understand it, to witness it, first in the words of the Bible, and then as a living experience in yourself. It isn't enough to read that Peter is doing that. It wasn't enough for Peter to read it somewhere. It had to become experience, living experience, over a period of time. And so we should be bending ourselves toward the experience of the invisible body by casting our net on the right side of the ship, taking our mind out of its creation called this physical form, rising above that mind into soul, which is conscious of the soul body. And in the interim, while there is a gap in the passage from mind to soul, being willing to accept that the dispensation of the Christ was to lift you into the Christ body, which was ever present where the world saw Jesus, just as it is ever present where the world sees you. This changeover in consciousness from the belief that I am mortal man to the knowledge that I am immortal self is casting your net on the other side. If you are not ready to make that decision, then you must go back and study a little harder. Read the Sermon on the Mount several more times. Practice what it says. Read more of the books. Hear more of the tapes. There are many things you must do until you can consciously say, I've reached the place where I'm willing to consider that I am not in a physical form, that I am not in a physical world, but I am a spiritual being in a spiritual body right here and right now. And then hold the consciousness frequently on that level until that inner Christ which is on the shore of your consciousness develops into a more living experience, and the essence becomes part of what you know to be present. Then you'll find your ship comes out of the sea onto the shore. You'll find the inner quality of John in you alerts you that Christ is leading you into the invisible kingdom on earth. This new faith is to replace the faith of the seven disciples in you. You had the faith of the will in Peter, the faith of reason in Thomas. But you had the twins in there, the Zebedee twins. And they are the symbol of faith and love united as one. This is to take place in us. There was the faith of Nathanael in wisdom. there was the faith of the other two disciples in external life. But now your faith is changing. All types of faith in you are becoming the faith that God is present as individual Christ selfhood. There are no seven disciples. The knowledge of oneness is coming into focus. Christ on the shore of your consciousness is leading you into the realization of the one divine self everywhere. The other disciples came in a little ship, for they were not far from the land, but as it were, 200 cubits, dragging the net with fishes. It was Peter, the will, jumps into the sea, and then the other disciples follow in a little ship. The will is always the leader. You can see that if your will is God-centered, everything will follow in a little ship. If your will is not God-centered, that little ship will follow humanly. Always Peter represents the fullness of your being. The little ship with other disciples represents all other qualities in you following the will of your being. When Peter is not just human will, but is human will lifted by love, then the ship comes to the shore. Because the shore is always close by, only 200 cubits away. In other words, the veil of the senses is all that separates us from the shore, from reality. And now this new quality in Peter, the illumination of love, should be functioning within us. A love that is selfless. A love that is not seeking personal welfare. A love that has learned that all seeking on the material level that is not preceded by an awareness of the inner Christ is a detour. An act that will never yield fish. What at first seemed to be turning away from the things we wanted is revealed to us as the only way to live, to turn away from the world, to hearken to the inner Christ, to let the inner Christ guide our consciousness, listening not with a sense mind, but with another quality called soul, deeper within, higher within. And then we come to the land. Now the land here means out of the sense mind, out of world thought, out of all material beliefs, which were shown to be transitory. The land is the kingdom of heaven on earth. The land is reality. When love and faith are combined, we are lifted by the Christ from the sea to the land. And there stands a fire with coals.